This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. Good afternoon. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto, Entrepreneur Friday. How to mentor young entrepreneurs to succeed. Also, we have an effort to quantify how much free internet use adds to the American economy. Another chance for you to win $1,000. That comes your way at 12:22 in Keyword for Cash. Now, though, stocks much higher on the day. Wall Street is growing more optimistic over the possibility of a U.S.-China trade deal. President says things are pretty good. Let's get some insight from Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services based in Pittsburgh. Gus, what do you make of what we're hearing about these trade talks?
Well, certainly it's good news that the U.S. and China are talking and that President Trump will be meeting with the vice premier. Obviously, it all depends on how the talks actually turn out, whether there is an agreement, whether some of that uncertainty out there because of trade is reduced. So we'll have to see whether this actually bears fruit.
Now, in the end, though, do we have to wait for an actual deal? Because there have been some highs and lows throughout this trade war.
That's correct. And we have good news one week and then bad news the next. I think we have to have some indication that both sides are on the same page and that they feel like they're making progress. We have had indications where, one side will say one thing and then one side will say the other thing. So we don't need a finalized deal, but certainly it needs to be agreed on that both sides think that we're making progress.
If the president is able to get concessions on intellectual property, it's been one of the big sticking points, obviously. Is there an economic impact if he's able to get that done, or is that really hard to quantify?
It's tough to quantify, but I certainly think that intellectual property is a big issue, perhaps the big issue between the United States and China. It is a source of tension, and I think, to be honest, Chinese theft of U.S. intellectual property is a drag on U.S. economic growth. So if there was a long-term deal on intellectual property, I think that would benefit the U.S. economy over the longer term.
Let's talk about some data. We got the number on consumer sentiment. It is climbing. Tell us about that and what it means.
Yeah, so we saw a big drop in consumer sentiment in August after President Trump imposed those new tariffs on imports from China. It has since rebounded in September and October, not quite up to where it was over the summer, but that's certainly an indication that consumers are feeling a little bit better about things. Consumer spending is really the bulwark of the U.S. economy right now, and so that's good news for continued expansion through the rest of this year and then into 2020.
So basically, if consumers are feeling good about things, they're more likely not to hunker down.
That's right. Consumer spending makes up about two-thirds of U.S. GDP. Incomes are going up. We have job growth. We have wage growth. So it's really a matter of how consumers are feeling and are they willing to spend a little bit more if their paycheck increases.
Good analysis. Thank you. Always appreciate you being with us. Gus Fauché, chief economist at PNC Financial Services based in Pittsburgh. The Federal Reserve is trying to figure out how much value free internet service brings to the economy. We're joined by David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors based in Denver, author of the book Understanding Central Banking. David, before we get into what exactly the Fed is looking at and how they're trying to measure this, why would the Fed want this information about what the free internet does to the economy?
Well, this is actually an important subject. Ever since our lives have been changed by this dot-com high-tech revolution, perhaps going back even to the mid-90s, it's really important because right now the Fed measures the economy as what we call gross domestic product, GDP, and it's the measure of the market value of products and services bought and sold each year. But that requires a price on those products in order to add them up. With the high-tech revolution, we have all these free products, including the internet. We've got email, search engines, Facebook, all free internet products. And let's look at it this way. Many economists think we can only grow about 2% per year that productivity is actually quite low, down around 1.5%. That's output per worker hour. But if we have a lot of free items in the high-tech revolution that both we're not measuring and have been adding to growth and adding to productivity, maybe we can grow at 3% in this $20 trillion economy, and that's significant.
How can they even begin to quantify this? It just seems really tough.
It is. Absolutely true. You're on the mark. It's been a dilemma. How do you quantify a free product? And maybe the only way to do it is to do a survey like Fed Chairman Powell has said the Fed is trying to do, ask people individually what the Internet is worth. But that's a long-term project, and nobody can be overly confident in the results. So I think we're running... Can we say we're flying blind? Maybe that's overstating it, but I don't think we have a good clue as to exactly how fast this economy is growing. And most importantly, the reason I emphasize productivity is because that's the key to growth. Labor force growth and productivity is the key to whether we can grow at 3% versus the current rate of 2%. So it's really an important subject.
Well, it's been one of the keys, too, what the Internet has done to businesses is just increased productivity. There's so much right at our fingertips.
Just think of the small businesses that could never have started without the Internet. That brings up one last thing. We'll make it fast. We're really, in terms of business investment, thinking much more about the software products that come out of this high-tech revolution rather than business spending on the old-fashioned quantifiable business structures and equipment. So everything in this economy is changing because of the high-tech revolution.
I wonder if there's something there, too, to what businesses save because they don't necessarily have to pay for everything that they're using online. That may be something that is just adding to profitability.
That's absolutely right. And once again, it means many small businesses that figure they can run their operations through the Internet have much lower startup costs and much easier entree into the into their industries than we've ever seen before. So we're really looking at a major revolution.
Yeah, really interesting. We'll see what the Fed comes up with. Thank you, David Jones, chairman of DMJ Advisors, based in Denver. Up next, General Motors pushing to settle the strike with the UAW. How close are they getting?
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
GM's latest offer to the UAW reportedly includes a higher level of investment in its U.S. plants. Let's get the latest on the month-long walkout. Keith Naughton is joining us, an auto reporter at Bloomberg based in Detroit. Keith, we're now hearing that this is up to maybe $9 billion. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so this is $2 billion more than GM had been offering the union. It includes building an electric truck at a Detroit factory that GM had been looking to close. It includes a new battery plant out in Lordstown, Ohio, the factory that GM has also stopped operating that President Trump has been so interested in. So there are a number of big plant investments here that the company says would create thousands of jobs.
And so is this, an appeal to get the rank and file to go, hey, maybe we should accept this?
Right. They seem to be appealing directly to the workers, maybe over the heads of the union leadership. The company is frustrated. They feel like the UAW is dragging its feet in these negotiations. They presented this proposal on Monday, and the union hasn't responded yet.
Ultimately, though, even if the rank and file supports it, until you get the tentative deal and a vote, you don't really know what the rank and file thinks.
Right, and ratification votes have been very difficult in recent years. 4 years ago, Chrysler, which went first that time, turned down the first offer that was presented to them. So that's something that the UAW leadership is very wary of, and they seem to be trying to drive a hard bargain.
And I guess raises to the union members, that's got to be something pretty appealing to them. Most workers like raises.
Don't we all? Yes. Their point is that the companies have had billions of dollars in earnings, record earnings in these recent years, and that the union helped them through bankruptcy back in 2009 and should be repaid now.
And you have GM's shares up about 2.5% off and on throughout the day. So Wall Street liking hearing this news. Thank you so much. Keith Naughton, auto reporter at Bloomberg based in Detroit.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Helping young entrepreneurs succeed is the focus of a Chicago-based institute. We'll find out how it's being done in Entrepreneur Friday. The number of stock splits has been dwindling. We'll talk to an expert on why that's happening and its impact on the markets. Metra's chairman addresses the number of deaths along rail lines in the Chicago area. And the former U.S. ambassador to Ukraine tells lawmakers the State Department was pressured by President Trump to remove her from the position. On Wall Street, the Dow is up 385 points. The NASDAQ is up 137. And the S&P is up 43. Oil today is up a little more than 1.5%. It is back in the $54 range. Getting cooler as the day goes along. We'll be down in the 40s later on this afternoon and right about freezing overnight tonight. 51 at O'Hare right now, 55 at Midway, and 53 along Chicago's lakefront. The Noon Business Hour is presented by the Village of Bedford Park. As we mentioned, oil prices jumping this morning at one point about 2%. This was after Iran reported two missiles struck one of its tankers. Let's get an update on the energy market. Phil Flynn is joining us, senior market analyst at the Price Group, also a Fox Business News contributor. Phil, what do you see from what you're looking at today?
I mean, what we're seeing, of course, is the return of geopolitical risk in the market. That it hasn't really gone away. A lot of people are going to be looking at this event and to see where this missile attack came from. Now, a lot of people right now are suspecting it could be Saudi Arabia in response for their previous attack on that when they were attacked on their oil facilities a couple months ago. So it's definitely something that's putting the market at risk. But I think even with that risk, because the U.S. is a big producer, there's a little bit of a cushion in supply, so we're not seeing prices absolutely explode. But I'll tell you this, if we continue to have these type of attacks, we're going to feel it when we pull up at the gas pump.
Yeah, is the uncertainty enough to continue to make oil prices climb?
I think it is. You know, we're in a time of year where the demand for oil is at its weakest point. It's going to pick up in the coming months as we get closer to winter. And when that happens, if we have these kind of attacks going, you're going to see a risk premium start to be built into that price. It could be $3 or $5 a barrel, which is going to end up, of course, at the gas tank costing you another 10 or 15 cents.
Thanks so much, Phil Flynn, a senior market analyst at Price Group, based here in Chicago. Again, oil is back in the $54 range. It is up right about 1.5% today. And the rest of the market's rising as well. In fact, all the major indexes up about 1.5% today. Let's see what's going on. Jeff Lehman is joining us, CIO of BKD Wealth Advisors, based in Springfield, Missouri. Jeff, is this all China trade today?
Yes, Cisco. I think that the markets continue to be dictated or dominated as they have in the last year by the ebbs and flows of the discussions with China, the ongoing trade war and tariff possibilities there. The Fed's weighed pretty heavily on the markets in terms of the determining direction here in recent months as well. So those are the two continuing factors that tend to drive activity on a daily basis right now.
Talk about the challenge for an investor because, you know, this trade roller coaster is just up and down all over the place, and we have no idea when we're actually going to get a deal and what that deal is going to look like.
I agree with that 100%. And really, both sides are pretty firm and in their views on how things should go. And this is a complicated matter to resolve. Will likely be with us for some time. So when we look at this, then we say, well, how do the fundamentals look that underlie this market? And, you know, what we've seen in 2019 really is a slowing of earnings growth for S&P 500 companies, which was expected in the sense that the corporate tax cuts that had a very positive impact in 2018 are now being lapped. So we expected slower earnings growth. But what we've had from the big drawdown in December of last year, though, is a rebound in price to earnings multiples that really essentially brought us back to a fair valuation right now. We do think going forward that an investor needs to pay attention to fundamentals. It's probably not going to be a matter of the rising tide lifting all boats going forward.
Let's talk about United and Boeing. United says it'll be probably at least January before they're getting back to using the 737 MAX. And yet with this announcement, you got United up about 1% today, and even Boeing is up about 0.5%.
Yeah, it's been kind of interesting, particularly with Boeing this year, with this catastrophic event in the news that's come out regarding the safety of their planes. And the stock took an immediate hit. It's down about 15% from the highs of the year, yet still up about 15% for the year to date, and kind of stabilized here in the upper 300s. I think that what I would surmise from the activity in the stock is that all of the scrutiny that the FAA is placing on Boeing and the other regulators around the world has served to, I think, increase the confidence of investors that Boeing will get this figured out. I guess the key word here is eventually, because I think most thought that those planes would be back online here in November. Now it's pushed back to January. So, any incremental uncertainty or continued delay might start to weigh on the stock price eventually.
Talk about what investors should do. What's your advice in markets? It's really been pretty volatile.
The volatility has absolutely picked up. I think, the key thing here is maintaining, appropriate risk profile. One interesting thing when you look at the market on a year-over-year basis, we're up 20% year-to-date in the S&P 500. But if you take it back a year, which captures that big drawdown in the fourth quarter of last year, returns are a bit above 7%, which is a little bit below average. Ironically, though, over that time frame, and I think very unexpectedly for most investors, bonds have actually returned 10% or just a bit more over that same one-year time frame. So I think despite what your near-term views are, I think it's important to maintain that portfolio diversification, because it pays off in an environment like this. The other thing I think, too, is once again just to pay attention to valuation. I mean, we see some companies in relatively out-of-favor sectors that look pretty attractive now, as for instance, in the industrials area where you can buy companies at a significant discount to the market PE multiple and also achieve a pretty solid yield.
Good insight. Thanks so much, Jeff Lehman, CIO of BKD Wealth Advisors. All the major indexes up right about 1.5% today. Up next, Entrepreneur Friday, using the experience gained in years of business to help up-and-coming entrepreneurs.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Entrepreneur Friday here on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're talking to a man who's helping young people find their entrepreneurial spirit. Nick Cirillo is joining us, founder and CEO, the Trust and Tracking Institute here in Chicago. Nick, before we get into kind of the nuts and bolts of exactly what entrepreneurs need to know when they're younger and just getting started, kind of tell us about what you do at the Trust and Tracking Institute.
Yeah, thank you, Cisco. I'm grateful to be here. It's fun to be on your show again. So what I've done is taken the experience and all the things that my restaurant company found success in building a dynamic culture and organization. I'm teaching that to other entrepreneurs and having that entrepreneurial kind of organizational culture in the organizations. And then also the leadership, what I call the trust and track leadership, which is a departure from the old school command and control leadership. So that's really where my focus has been in my next phase of life here, so to speak.
So what do? You have young workers, you have entrepreneurs who are trying to not only get a business off the ground, but also inspire and really get those young workers to perform. What are some of the things you tell young entrepreneurs to do?
Yeah, what keep getting revisited and keeps happening is how these the entrepreneurs, this younger generation, the millennials, the Z generation, there's definitely some themes in these employees that I've had in my company and also the companies I've helped, is really understanding how to clarify the purpose of the organization, a collective purpose, really clarifying the values and using those purpose and those values as an operating system for the business model, along with, you know, the other things that this generation asks a lot about is, what's my career path? How do I keep moving up in the company? And then the transparency part, this is the scary part for some business owners, is open books and sharing how we make money together. So you could see, Cisco, that actually what we're doing in the business is cultivating, teaching the employees how to run the business. So we're developing that entrepreneurship mindset in the business while we're helping entrepreneurs be entrepreneurs at the same time.
Seems like corporate responsibility is just way more important for younger workers now. Not only how much money are we making, but what are we doing with it?
Yeah, you know, it's so fun to hear it more in the media than ever before. I mean, I started doing this years ago, and it's becoming more prevalent in the media because this is what this generation's asking for. And I think the other really important thing to remember is this generation has, I would say, a really high BS meter. You know, so that's the other thing owners got to, and founder and managers have to pay attention to, is they're going to check, they're going to kick the tires. And if the values aren't authentically being lived in the, which is the definition of culture in the organization, if that's not happening, if that's just marketing spin, they're going to know that right away, and they're going to get right out the door, you know?
What I'm thinking, young entrepreneurs, there's got to be some things to avoid so that you don't just mess things up right at the beginning as you're getting your business launched. Do you tell them some of the pitfalls?
Yeah, for sure. They want to know that. It's really interesting because when I'm interviewing this generation, you know, these kids and the millennials and Z, I also find them asking questions more than just how much I get paid. How is this company, you know, again, back to that purpose thing, you know, how is that responsibility coming back? And I would say the pitfalls is managers, you know, there's something going on around this generation not really trusting authority anymore. And of course, they got a lot of good reason. I mean, look at the examples we have in society today that this generation has been brought up with, where they don't trust the authority so much. So they want to know more about, what is it I need to do to be successful in the company? Teach me how to do that, and then get the managers out of the way. And it's amazing how I've experienced this generation is not lazy. They actually outperform my expectations over and over.
Yeah, really impressive. I know the more that I'm around younger workers, the more impressed I am with them as well. Thank you. Nick Cirillo, founder and CEO, the Trust and Tracking Institute here in Chicago, joining us on Entrepreneur Friday. Still to come, why a lack of stock splits is not a good sign for equity markets.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Stock splits, once commonplace in the market, have dried up as of late. Joining us to discuss why this could be a bad sign for equities, Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. Mark, before we talk about what it means, why do you think the stock splits have dried up?
Well, I think that there could be a number of reasons, but the reason that I think is worrisome is that companies tend to have what might be called a sweet spot, where they think their shares ought to trade. They don't want it to be too expensive or too cheap. Turns out there's a lot of behavioral research suggests that investors like to see a stock perhaps in the right below 100 or in the low hundreds, but if it gets much lower, down in the single digits or well above $100, fewer people are interested. So there's this sweet spot that they want their stocks to trade in. If the stock goes well above it and they think a bear market's coming, so bringing the stock price back within that sweet spot, then there's no reason to split. But if they think the stock will more or less permanently stay above that area where they want their stock price to trade, then they'll split it. And that's what's worrisome, is that few companies right now are splitting their shares, suggesting that they think that perhaps their stock price will be coming back for natural reasons, and that would suggest a bear market.
And really, I guess, not really boding well for the future as investors are trying to figure out what to do with their money.
Well, that's right. Now, of course, I need to stress, especially on a day with the Dow up over 400 points, that this is definitely not a short-term indicator. It suggests more of a long-term worry. But one test to see that this still is a good idea to follow is that stocks that do split, even though there are a lot fewer of them, but stocks that do split do tend to continue outperforming the market. There's a number of academic work, research studies back 30 years ago that found that they did. And I, in my column, I looked to see whether that has continued to be the case, and it has been. So there is something to be said about these companies that do trade, do decide to split their shares. Unfortunately, just very few of them relative where it was 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Really interesting indicator. Thank you so much. Always good to have you on the show. Mark Hulbert, an investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com. If you missed any part of today's Noon Business Hour or any of the shows, the replay podcast is available on WBBMNewsRadio.com and the Radio.com app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.